Hey, everybody, before we get started, I just want to encourage everyone here, watch the Select Committee on January 6th hearings. I think it is an important historical record of one of the worst days in our country's history. And I think it's important that you are able to see for yourselves just what happened on that day, who was responsible, and that you can share that information with your friends and your family and your colleagues when they say none of it matters. Every bit of it matters. I hope you'll tune in. I hope you'll find all of our content, ask us questions, and now on with the show.
Welcome back to The Lincoln Project. I'm your host, Reed Galen. Today, I'm joined by Peloton enthusiast, comedian, and co-host of not one but two LPTV shows, We're Speaking, as well as The Game We're In. Maya, welcome back.
Thanks, Reed. I am incredibly happy to be here today.
Well, I'll tell you what, Maya, usually when you and I are together, we're lucky enough to take listener questions, and I think we might get to one or two towards the end of the show. But I think that given that the emergency meeting of the January 6th committee that they held today, and we can see now why they considered it so crucial to get this out, I think we have to talk a little bit about what we saw and heard during Cassidy Hutchison's testimony today. So I wanted to start with this. I spent way too much time around presidential events, motorcades, the Secret Service, all that. And I'm going to get to that in a minute. But as someone who lives 3,000 miles away, who is now neck deep in all of this because of your blessed decision to join us, what was your sense of it?
First of all, protocol. Like, I'm all the way out here on the West Coast, and there's certain things that we just expect that we're not going to see, just like as a layperson, we're not going to see happen. Like, I put this right up there. This is going to sound terrible, but let me finish with this. But it's right up there with the slap at the Oscars. It's not something you are expecting to see. You expect a certain level of decorum, of protocol to exist in sacred spaces, spaces that are sacred to our culture. And so I think what we all saw today catch up.
Right. And let's start catching up. And we'll go a little bit out of order as far as the events were concerned, but let's start with the who's who. So Cassidy Hutchison was the special assistant to the president and assistant to Mark Meadows. Now, guys, in the West Wing, there are what are called commissioned officers. And those are special assistants to the president, deputy assistants to the president, and assistants to the president. And assistants to the president, Maya, are the ones who normally, there's maybe six or seven of them at the White House. They're the people who have walk-in privileges. The chief of staff, the deputy chiefs of staff, counselors to the president, head of domestic policy council, the national security advisor. So this was a woman who I think is only 25. And I'll tell you, Maya, just on that front, you know, incredible poise from this young woman. But she would have been, especially in a White House as unruly and undisciplined and without any protocol, you just mentioned that word a minute ago, that she would have been in a lot of these meetings because Trump had people walking in and out of the Oval Office all day long. So she was there all day, every day, probably carrying out various tasks for Meadows. But on January 6th, you know, she was there from the morning before Donald Trump and his entourage left for the event on the Ellipse. She was there at the event on the Ellipse. She was there as the chaos between the end of Trump's remarks and him getting in the car and then at the White House after that, right? So she's like this eyewitness to history. And I got to say that she had given something, I think, like 20 hours of depositions to the January 6th committee, which is an extraordinary number in and of itself. You know, and first of all, let's be clear that for the foreseeable future, Maya, Ms. Hutchison will have to have personal security in her life. She will have to literally be protected either by federal agents or by private security for the foreseeable future based on what she did today.
Well, and the fact that she had the presence of mind to know that it was more important to come forward than it was to stay silent. And I think she is 25 or 26 is quite incredible. You can't even rent a car without paying extra at that age, I don't think. And so to know that she's the person who almost seems like the line between accountability and not having accountability for a man as powerful as Trump, yes, I would say that her life is probably in danger.
So let's talk about this. So there at the White House that morning, you know, just to walk through the TikTok of sort of the events as we now hear them from inside the White House, Maya, that whether or not it was the United States Secret Service, the National Security Division of the Justice Department, everybody said in their own way, something's going down. Bad dudes in town, lots of intel coming in. And these are people, you know, the National Security Division, the best among the best, probably, of the Justice Department, of the FBI. Secret Service, right? The preeminent personal protection detail in the world, right? Nobody better at this stuff than they are. And so they're telling White House senior staff, you know, I assume the National Security Council. So they're going to the Ellipse, right? Which, guys, if you haven't been to DC in a while, is this gigantic lawn south of the White House. And it used to be open to the public. You know, people would have picnics, people would have demonstrations, all this other stuff. And I think you could probably still walk on there, Maya, but since 9/11, you know, it's a much different thing. You used to be able, you could park there as a civilian on the weekends. Right now, only White House staff can park there and no one else whenever it's, you know, not being used. But they start talking, Maya, about the events. And as the listeners have heard, I'm an old, what we call advance man. And I don't want to be too like nerdy and down in the weeds, Maya, but basically advance means that you go out ahead of time. In my case, for the president of the United States. So usually if it was domestic, it was inside the United States, it was somewhere between 6 and 7 days. If we were overseas, right, I went to Russia twice, I went to Japan, I went to El Salvador, I went to Italy, it was a couple of weeks. And you are the staff person in charge of all of the arrangements for the president of the United States. You know, the first lady will have her own team. The airplane has its own team, Maya. The helicopters have their own team. And that doesn't even get into all of the other things, you know, with the Secret Service and the military and all the other stuff, because wherever the President of the United States goes, that is technically the White House. So anything he or she can do from the White House itself, they have to be able to do from the road. And so when you hear these stories about the transcripts and the radio calls of the park police saying, this guy's got a gun, he's got an AR-15, this guy's got a Glock-style pistol, I mean, Maya, in any normal occasion, especially not only just out in the general public, but certainly within that proximity to the White House or a place where they know the president's going to be, like there would have been significant action on behalf of just about every cop or agent, you know, Secret Service or otherwise, within, you know, 3/4 of a mile of the place.
Can we talk about the weapons? Because that, for me, is the part that stood out the most. Like, that was the word of the day, because it contradicts so much of what Fox News was coming out and saying and different Congress people coming out and saying that, oh, this was just tourists. It sounds like everyone was armed with real weapons, with makeshift weapons. I heard at one point spears, and then spears being attached to flagpoles. And so everyone in the know knew that these were armed people. This was more than a rally. This was something, it almost felt like they were preparing for war. And they actually had a war room. From what I hear from her testimony, there was a room that was called the war room. Why in the world would you need that? What exactly were they planning to do? And I think it's pretty clear at this point.
Right. And so let's just talk about that. So, you know, when you go to an event with the president, it's not unlike going to, even now, going to a sporting event, right, at an arena or a stadium, it's a little bit more involved, right? You walk through, not the big Mamba Jamba thing, Maya, you see at the airport, but like the regular metal detector, right? If you want to go to an event with the president, you walk through the metal detector. You take your phone out, you take your keys out. There's uniformed members of the Secret Service there who are keeping track of everybody. And we used to even have a formula, Maya, for how many people you could get through a given mag, as we called them, in an hour, right? So we said, okay, if it's 100 people an hour, I think it was like 200 maybe. If it was 200 people an hour and we knew we had 10,000 people, then we needed this many mags to get this many people through in time to have the place full for the president to arrive. Well, here was the problem for Trump, was that all these people with the weapons knew that if they showed up with a long gun at the mag, the Secret Service was going to take it away from them.
So just bring a flagpole, I guess. Is that their plan?
Right. But that's the thing, too, is that they would have taken a flagpole. They would have taken a spear. They would have taken any of this stuff that was a threat not only to the president, but also to anybody else who might have been around. You're not allowed to bring any sort of weapon into an event like that.
No, and to Trump's statement, he said, they're not here to harm me. They're not here to hurt me. Like, that to me is absolutely wild.
Right. So, Rob, let's play the clip about the mags.
When we were in the offstage announce area tent behind the stage, he was very concerned about the shot, meaning the photograph that we would get, because the rally space wasn't full. One of the reasons, which I've previously stated, was because he wanted it to be full and for people to not feel excluded because they'd come far to watch him at the rally. And he felt the mags were at fault for not letting everybody in. But another leading reason, and likely the primary reason, is because he wanted it full and he was angry that we weren't letting people through the mags with weapons, what the Secret Service deemed as weapons and our weapons. But when we were in the offstage announced tent, I was part of a conversation. I was in the vicinity of a conversation where I overheard the president say something to the effect of, you know, I don't effing care that they have weapons. They're not here to hurt me. Take the effing mags away. Let my people in. They can march to the Capitol from here. Let the people in. Take the effing mags away.
All right. So, Maya, in this, 45 seconds of testimony, what do we know? One, that the president only cares about his own safety, not that of anyone else. Two, he is willing to do away with Secret Service protocols that are designed to protect him and those around him, including other members of the crowd. Three, he only cared about the shot. Now, he said, these are my people, they've come, all those. He didn't care, right? He just wanted the picture, right? Because remember, this is a TV guy. He's a TV guy first, last, and always, right? He makes Jim Carrey from The Cable Guy look well-adjusted when it comes to television. And so he wanted the shot, and he was afraid that it was going to look empty. Right now, as an advanced guy, you're always worried about that, but you made arrangements for your site to ensure that you could rearrange it if you needed to. That wasn't the issue. Was they didn't want to come in, and he also knew, Maya, that they were headed for the Capitol. He admitted that. He said, they can march to the Capitol from here. He knew it.
And also that their target was not counter-protesters. Their target was Congress. So he knows, with weapons, marching. It's almost like he wanted to lead the charge like he was a general.
No, he did. And Maya, you have hit the orange-colored nail on his weird head. He wanted to lead. He wanted to lead the protest down Pennsylvania Avenue or Constitution Avenue. He wanted to take over. He wanted to be basically in a chariot, right? Cheeto Caesar in a chariot. At the front of this insurrection, he was going to march up the Capitol steps. He was going to take over Congress. And he had an army, ragtag as it was, to do it. Now, he didn't get there, but Rob, let's play the clip as to why.
So once the president had gotten into the vehicle with Bobby, he thought that they were going up to the Capitol. And when Bobby had relayed to him, we're not, we don't have the assets to do it, it's not secure, we're going back to the West Wing. The president had very strong, very angry response to that. Tony described him as being irate. The president said something to the effect of, I'm the effing president, take me up to the Capitol now. To which Bobby responded, sir, we have to go back to the West Wing. The president reached up towards the front of the vehicle to grab at the steering wheel. Mr. Engel grabbed his arm, said, sir, you need to take your hand off the steering wheel. We're going back to the West Wing. We're not going to the Capitol. Mr. Trump then used his free hand to lunge towards Bobby Engel. And when Mr. Renato had recounted this story to me, he had motioned towards his clavicles.
Now, Maya, I've seen a lot in American politics. This brought me up short. I didn't even know what to do when I heard Cassidy tell this story because it was so far out of the realm of anything I could have ever imagined in my time in those situations. Because it was the kind of thing, as we were talking about, Rick and I were in a meeting with some folks today, if you had gone into a Hollywood pitch and told that story, they would have said, that's way too unrealistic. It would never happen like that.
It blew me away in way. As a matter of fact, I actually had to replay it because I was absolutely sure it wasn't Trump that they were talking about. I was like, that actually couldn't be the case. Because this is straitjacket stuff. this is anybody who's paying attention right now about to step in kind of stuff. I mean, this is lunatic stuff. And I think anybody listening to it is asking themselves today, oh my goodness, how in the world was this person in charge of our country? Well, no wonder things are a shambles.
In charge of 1,400 nuclear warheads.
Hello.
Jesus Christ.
Like, hello. I'm like, the fact, like, lunging towards the steer, like, who does this? It's mind-boggling to me. You know, it's funny because the night before when they said they, you know, everybody was speculating about who the witness was going to be and, you know, well, it must be big because, and then everyone was disappointed when it was Cassidy Hutchinson. For a minute, people were like, well, I don't know. And then this kind of testimony, and I have to ask, like, you know, everybody's wondering if there's any video of this, because if he had a documentary crew with him at some point, and we know they have tapes, I'm going, is there video of this? Because this is the kind of stuff that blows the roof off the house.
You know, that I don't know. I mean, I can tell you that there's a couple of things. So during the course of her testimony today, she used some terminology, offstage announce. That's where a president, vice president, first lady, whoever will stand prior to being announced onto the stage. Ladies and gentlemen, the president of the United States. And then they go on. OTR, that means off the record. An OTR movement is like when President Biden goes to get ice cream, right? They don't tell anybody, they don't take the whole motorcade. But the idea is you send a couple of agents, an advance guy out about half an hour ahead of time, and it doesn't give a bad guy, Maya, a chance to plan something, if that makes sense. Whereas the official schedule, you know where they're going to be, you know what they're going to do. And, you know, you have all of the different agents and intelligence and all the other stuff that they do to make sure that those sites are secure. But an OTR movement means it's not planned or not for very long. And so moving up to the Capitol would have been an off the record movement. But here's the thing is the detail leader, right? So the detail leader in a presidential protective detail, he is the guy in charge, right? At the end of the day, or woman in charge, they are responsible for everything that happens at an event around the president, whatever it is. And I have no doubt that this agent said, you know, not only did he believe it was probably a bad idea personally, Maya, but he knew that there was a mob on the way. And his training would say, ain't no way in hell I'm taking the president of the United States into that kind of situation, no matter how badly he wants it, because he's only got one job, right? And it is not necessarily to do exactly as the president of the United States tells him. It is to make sure that as the main protectee, not only in Washington, D.C., not only in America, but on the face of the earth, Maya, that that person remains safe. And that the fact is, as you said, Trump wanted to literally lead the charge. Now, it's interesting, too, because what Ms. Hutchinson said was that Pat Cipollone, the White House counsel, said, he goes up there, we're all going down for literally every crime you can think of, right? So it was him and the other guy, Urschfeld, whatever his name is, who, like, they were the two guys going, this is bad news, this is bad news, this is bad news. So now they get back to the White House, Maya, and it just continues. Like, if the insanity of trying to choke a Secret Service agent, the guy dedicated to saving your life, isn't crazy enough, it only got crazier from there.
Well, it was like he threw a temper tantrum like a kid who wanted to go get ice cream and the parents were like, no. And so it's like they drag him back to the White House and now he's fuming because this is probably one of the few times in his life that someone has told him no, and an unequivocal no. And it was probably also the moment that he realized he wasn't going to get to be president anymore.
That's a really good point. Maybe, Maya, that's the point that's been missed in all of this. And I think you just really got it. He knew that but for him being there on site, that the chances of Mike Pence doing what he needed to do, the chances of his protesters doing what they needed to do were probably, you know, effectively zero at that point, because his presence there would have, to say would have changed the dynamic is an understatement of epic proportions.
This situation would have exploded.
Not only would it have exploded, but he would have led them into the chamber. He would have said, Mike, where are you? I'm coming for you. Could you imagine him standing in the rotunda like some deranged maniac? I guess he probably was a deranged maniac, asking his agents, telling his agents, you tell me where he is. You tell me where he is. You tell me where Pelosi is. You tell me where McConnell is. And now they're like, what the hell am I supposed to do? As, you know, several hundred armed and, you know, foaming at the mouth insurrectionists are like propelling him. And, he, you know, the dopamine rush that he probably would have been experiencing that a moment would have been, I don't even know what the word is. I mean, that's the other part, too. I did a little video earlier today. The only word I could come up with was unbelievable. And that doesn't do it.
When you talk about, you know, power being a drug, the adrenaline that it would have fueled a fury, more people would have gotten hurt. More people would have gotten killed. I mean, I don't know that we'd be having this conversation right now.
We absolutely would not.
So I think today we are all realizing how absolutely close. We thought we had realized how close we were to losing democracy. But I think today, those who haven't already realized definitely realized it.
Right. So let's zoom back out from what could have been, thank God. And let me just say this too, and we've said this before, right? But for Officer Goodman leading the protesters in the wrong direction, putting himself in between them and Mitt Romney, which we iconically see running down the hallway, right, away from them as Officer Goodman says, you got to get out of here. But for whether you believe he's a hero or not, Mike Pence saying, I ain't doing this. However he came to that decision, but for him saying that, who knows where we are. But for that Secret Service agent, Donald Trump's detail leader saying, sir, we're going back to the West Wing. Who knows what would have happened? So now let's zoom back in. We're now inside the West Wing, you know, not to recount it moment by moment, but the thing that is, you know, she's clearly communicating, Maya, as she's moving around the West Wing, trying to figure out how to deal with this stuff, right? Remember, she's an assistant to the president, but she's 25, right? She has no authority in and of herself. And the thing that keeps coming up is Meadows is sitting on the couch in his office, going through his phone, sitting on the couch, scrolling through his phone. And she must have said it, what, four or five, maybe six times, Maya. She couldn't get him to snap out of it.
Yeah, we all have the visual of that now. And of course, we're all wondering, at least I was what was he doing on his phone? What was so engrossing in his phone that was preventing him from paying attention to the moment? And we soon saw who he was texting. And this to me, you know, as we were watching, the hearings were so riveting that I didn't even have a chance to like click over and see how Fox News was covering it. But this was the part where it's like, okay, this is where Fox News is heavily implicated in the conversations of the moment.
Well, I can tell you that we watched some of the, at the break, Brett Baer, who is probably the last real news person at Fox News, you could tell that this was a guy who was torn up inside. You could tell he even said, I've never seen anything like this. He made this statement, right? He had John Roberts and another person and a woman who I can't recall. He said this. He said, it's incredible. I've never seen anything like this. And he pauses like I do to give somebody else an opportunity to say anything. And there's a dead silence for like 10 seconds, Maya, until Baer jumped back in. He's like, is anybody going to say anything? And Roberts is like, well, how about you, Monica, or whatever her name was? And she's like, well, I don't know. But yeah, now, as you know, Joe and I talked about on the podcast that we recorded as we're recording this yesterday, Fox, you know, Lachlan and Rupert, never huge fans of Trump, right? And now you have to decide, I guess, you know, if you're these guys, like, is Trump still the horse, you know, you're going to hitch your wagon to? Because to say it's bananas is an insult to bananas.
Well, and that's what's wild to me is we have primaries today, you know, throughout the country, and we're in primary season, midterms, and there are candidates who are standing by Trump in this moment, who have been endorsed by Trump. And so it's not just Trump, it's the Trump effect on our politics. Like, what did they call this, legitimate political discourse at one point? How are they going to stand by this? I mean, where do we go from here? That's what this moment feels like today.
Right. Well, and, you know, in the state that I live in, Senator Mike Lee, you know, a very close ally of the president, as I've mentioned before, pointed not only Sidney Powell, but also John Eastman to the White House is on the primary ballot today. He will probably win that primary as we're recording here, but Evan McMullen, who is running as an independent, will be taking him on. And let me just say this, in my own little way, Maya, I will be reminding every Utahan I can find that Mike Lee is a seditionist and has no place in a position of public trust. But let's get back to that day. So Cassidy Hutchinson, you know, she's moving around. You know, Hirschman's there, Cipollone's there. Like, they're all flipping out. They need him to say something. He doesn't want to say anything. And at one point, and I'm going to get this a little bit out of order, but I'm not sure that it matters. She goes to the Oval Office. And in the Oval Office, oh, I should say off the Oval Office, Maya, there's a small dining room. And she walks in, and there's one of the ushers, and there's ketchup on the wall, right? Ketchup. because he had thrown his hamburger, or cheeseburger, or well-done steak, whatever it was, he'd thrown his lunch against the wall because he was so angry. Like, to your point about, like, having a tantrum, Donald Trump has the emotional IQ of a four-year-old.
Absolutely. And for me, this is what I'm talking about when I say protocol, because this is not something that one would expect from any kind of leader. And so to hear that, just as much as the weapons kind of being so prominent at the rally, like, this is something that just really truly blew me away, because, but like, the White House is an historic place. Like, that's kind of like walking into a museum and throwing a hamburger at the wall because you're angry. Like, this is not presidential, not even kind of. And so the thought that this man would ever ascend to power, like, is there going to be accountability? A lot of people are asking that after today. Like, this seems to be enough evidence that the Department of Justice should be paying attention.
I would say this, is that they're absolutely paying attention. As we mentioned, I think in one of our last episodes, maybe last week, that a couple of weeks ago, Attorney General Merrick Garland said, I am watching these hearings and the Department of Justice is watching these hearings. And so I would say for everyone who has felt like the Attorney General has not moved fast enough, just a reminder that when the Department of Justice is going to prosecute someone, and it could be the President of the United States, and it could be anybody else who's accused of a federal crime, like, they collect evidence. And when they've got you dead to rights, that's when they come for you. And I would agree with you, Maya, at least as lay people here, it would sure seem like all of his various activities would seem to be, you know, seditious conspiracy, you know, at the very least, you know, trying to interrupt a federal proceeding, whatever it is, right? You know, as David Loftman, who I had on, you know, former DOJ senior staff said, you know, it could be wire fraud, right? Because the $250 million that they fundraised off of false pretenses. So, like, remember, Al Capone didn't go to jail for murder and bootlegging. He went to jail for tax evasion.
Right. Well, let's not forget the witness tampering. I think everybody perked up at that point because it was like, oh, so y'all have been pressuring, tampering, thinly veiled threats to witnesses. I'd love to know who was on the other end of those conversations.
Well, I would say this. I don't even think they were thinly veiled. But let me just, before we get to that topic in particular, I do want to talk about the construction and how they have ordered these hearings, because, Maya, you have seen they drop a little bombshell, or maybe a big bombshell, in the last like 6-8 minutes of each one of these, right? It's sort of like the coming soon.
Get them hooked.
Yeah, they get them hooked. They're like, well, shit, now I got to see how it comes out. And so, yeah, you know, these people are being texted, do the right thing. He is watching. All this other stuff. And so, you know, again, if you believe that your life is in danger, if your career is in danger, then you may not be as forthcoming as you might otherwise be. Not unlike, I mean, people said this over and over, and I would agree with them. I'm not going to find something unique. It was just like seeing something like a mobster would do, right? Like, keep your mouth shut and everything will be fine, right? Keep your mouth shut and everything will be fine.
The great thing about the hearings being spaced out the way they are is it seems like with every hearing, as people are realizing, oh, Trump is going to go down, it is inspiring other people to find their courage. I believe Benny Johnson put it, is they're finding their voice and recalling things that perhaps they weren't recalling before. And so more people are going to be coming forward. And so I think it's a really smart way to structure things.
Well, and I'll also say that, again, guys, let's think about this. You can, and it is totally natural and totally human to say, you know, these people, they worked for the guy. They were there through all of this other stuff he did. And you're absolutely right. But if someone like Cassidy Hutchinson is going to come forward and give the testimony she gave today under oath, we have to say thank you for that. It does not necessarily forgive other sins. But I think stuff like today, Maya, comes pretty darn close, at least for Ms. Hutchinson, to balance in the ledger, if not pointing in her direction. But I'll say this too, is that now you see that a lot of these people don't want that Henry Hill moment, right? At the end of Goodfellas, they're like, keep smiling, pal. You're going to prison. Your wife's going to prison. Your kids are going to be orphans. And like, he was a mobster, right? Like, he was a hardened criminal. These are people, Maya, who are largely political bureaucrats. They're advance guys, they're event guys, they're fundraisers, you know, their staff people, like, they are not built for federal prison. And I think each of them is now saying, I'll be damned if I'm going down for Donald Trump, because we know, Maya, if there's anything we know, is he sure as hell wouldn't go down for them.
Oh, absolutely not. which there were more mention of pardons today. So I'm super curious about that, because this idea that somebody can issue pardons who is clearly a criminal himself is crazy to me. And I tweeted about the blanket pardon, because it was like, oh, it said something about it like a coupon from Bed Bath & Beyond. Like, you can't just like dole it out to everybody. But this whole thing is wild to me. And I feel like people are riveted in ways that we did not expect. And so that gives me hope, I want to say.
But it's interesting, Maya, because he could have. He really could have. There is nothing in the Constitution that says that there's any fetters whatsoever on a president's ability to offer pardon for federal crimes, right? That's the other part too. Doesn't apply to the states. It's only to federal crimes, which most, if not all of these, would have been in the context of January 6th. And even if you brought a weapon across state lines, that's a federal charge. So like, there were a whole bunch of people who probably, Maya, right up until like 11:59:59 on January 20th, 2021, thought that they were going to get the email or the phone call or an envelope from the Justice Department saying like, congratulations, here's your pardon. And none of them got it. None of them got it.
Yeah, so I don't think he cares about saving anybody but himself. And so I can't wait for the next hearings, I have to tell you that.
But this is the ironic part, Maya, is that if he had done it, he might have saved himself. Maybe not politically, but probably legally. Because all these people would have been like, I'm pardoned, forget it, I'm not talking to you. You know, but again, the guy always finds a way to hurt himself ultimately because of his mania. You know, again, as I like to say, you wouldn't ask him to do your math homework, but he's got this particular unique thing with his people. But I'd be interested to see too, Maya, between all of this stuff, between the Roe v. Wade thing, how much energy now Democratic voters, Democratic activists, and Democratic candidates are picking up. Because if you could see what I'm seeing is like Republicans, to your point earlier, should be on the ropes, right? 100 candidates, including the guy who's running for governor of Michigan, the guy who's already the nominee for Pennsylvania, the woman who wants to be the nominee for Arizona, they are all 100,000% in on the big lie. And every time one more of these things happen, they don't moderate, right? They either shut up or they double or triple down on some other crazy ass thing, whether or not it's drag queens or whatever. So you can see that Kevin McCarthy and Mitch McConnell, the sands are shifting underneath them. And maybe they've been tap dancing on quicksand for all these years, right? And maybe now it's catching up with them. But you'll also see that, you know, Kevin McCarthy called and said, you know, what's going on? He better not come up here. He better not come up here. And I thought this was also beautiful, Maya, that they use the people who are most likely to be harmed politically by, you know, saying things like McCarthy's like, this is unacceptable. It's un-American, yada, 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 which is going to push, you know, McCarthy further away from Trump, which in this moment he may be okay with. But as far as his chances of being speaker, they're, you know, they're plummeting, which is, him being speaker isn't good. No Republican being speaker is good in this moment. But again, back to how they have produced these hearings, they've done a masterful job of making sure that everybody who can be turned against one another inside the Republican whirlpool is, because that's really one of the genius parts of trying to dismantle an authoritarian movement, which is to get it to eat itself.
Absolutely. And I think this is where I'm glad that you brought up Democrats and whether or not they're going to use this, because this is where it is important to, you know, drive those wedges in. And the hearings have given them so many potential clips that they can use for ads that I'm like, all right, this is where you go on attack. And it is so important because unfortunately, a lot of people aren't watching the hearings. They're hearing, you know, bits and pieces of it, but they're not riveted in the way that you and I are. I have friends who, you know, don't even know that the hearings are happening. And so it's those clips that people will see from the ads and then hopefully will drive them back to find out more about the hearings themselves to actually inform and educate themselves. Because this is the problem with information in our culture is if it isn't almost like over the top outrageous information, it doesn't get through. But this is a time where this outrageous information is absolutely true. And so therefore, hopefully it can actually pierce the consciousness in a way so that the average person pays attention and uses this knowledge to get out the vote in their communities so that we can return to some sort of normalcy. I would love to see that.
So Maya, I got asked a question today, and this person said, what are you going to do when the fight for democracy is over? And I said, the fight for democracy is never over. If this has taught us anything, is that the fight for democracy is a day in, day out slog. It means doing everything you can all day, every day to make sure that in your way, you protect it. Because if you don't, this is what happens.
Democracy is a lifestyle. We live and breathe it. And we have a diverse democracy, so it's incredibly difficult for people to figure out how to work together. But that's the beauty of America, that we get to have these challenges. And when you have diverse viewpoints, you can come together and build consensus. Like I keep saying, we shouldn't have debate clubs as much as we should have consensus clubs in schools, and students can actually learn how to work together. So if we can do that as a lifestyle, bring back civics, make democracy a lifestyle, I think we actually could get to where we would like to be, which is, I don't know, just, you know, a little bit of harmony. That's all I need.
Just even normal. I'll take people arguing just normally. But democracy is a lifestyle. We're going to make a t-shirt out of that. All right. Before we get out of here, Maya, why don't we take a couple of questions? We promised we would. We didn't know we'd be interrupted by breaking news today. But all right. So at Bushwood Greg asked, the word civil war is being thrown around more and more. Is that something that we're really close to, and are blue and red states headed for a divorce? I would say this is that, you know, when we think about civil war as Americans, we think about the North versus the South, the Union versus the Confederacy. And from a geographic perspective, Maya, like it made sense, right? Because there was a fault line across borders. There were Southern states, there were Northern states, there were border states. You know, there was a clear reason for one side and a clear reason for the other. The country isn't split up that way now. That's one. So just on the sort of, you know, are red states going to turn on blue states? Do I think there'll be a civil war? I certainly hope not. But certainly in this time, Maya, we see the people like Donald Trump, but not just him, but Tucker Carlson, Steve Bannon, Ron DeSantis, using the language of what we call violence entrepreneur or race entrepreneurs, right? Clearly intentionally dividing people, making violence and inciting violence a normal part of the political discourse. So do I think there'll be a civil war? I don't. Do I believe there will be more violence? I do, but I certainly pray there isn't, Maya, but I don't know what that looks like. I don't think anybody can predict it.
Yeah, Reed, you and I both have had the opportunity to be in conversation with Barbara F. Walter, who wrote How Civil Wars Start and How to Stop Them. And one of the things that really struck me from that book is the misconception of what a civil war looks like, and that here it would be more like an insurgency. That's what modern civil war looks like. And so I know I want to be able to go to the grocery store. And I'll tell you, outside the grocery store where I live, and I live in a quote unquote elite liberal type area. And there was a Trump stand set up with tons of flags and selling t-shirts. And every maybe once a week or so, this guy would set up this entire stand on the sidewalk. And it made me nervous. Why? Because I know that in a modern civil war, what it looks like is terrifying people that they actually might be in the grocery store living their regular life. And there's maybe a mass shooting because these, you know, 4chan groups and people get stoked up about the violence. And that's part of them trying to disrupt the social order. They're like, hey, we don't get to play the way we want to play now. And so because of fear, they want to disrupt the social order. And so they launch these attacks.
Which a young man actually did for that reason in an African-American neighborhood in a grocery store in Buffalo just a few weeks ago, where he said this is a race war. And then went and shot, I think, 10 Black people.
Exactly. And so I asked her, I was like, in a sense, are we already experiencing some of what that looks like? And you're 100% right, Reed, when you talk about, you know, the ethnic entrepreneur, the race entrepreneur, we have these leaders who are stoking that violence. And it is, that's the part that makes me nervous.
This is the one thing, too, is that this is going to sound weird, but Trump is the monster we know. If he starts to fade away, someone and something will fill the vacuum that he leaves behind. It could be a Tucker Carlson. It could be a Steve Bannon, who's more of an architect and a, you know, writes blueprints for how this stuff works. It could be a DeSantis. It could be somebody else. We just don't know. But clearly, as we've seen, and I think this is something else in Professor Walter's book that, again, it's called How Civil Wars Start and How to Stop Them. Absolutely. Local bookseller, Amazon, go get it. Is that people will put up with economic hardship, loss of economic opportunity, bad education for their kids. But Maya, what they won't put up with is a loss of status, perceived or real. And so, you know, as I've tried to tell some groups of Democrats that I've spoken to lately, you have to understand that for a lot of the people who now identify as Republicans that this is an existential fight. They see it as protecting their way of life, that their way of life is going away, whether or not it's people of color, whether or not it's the libs, whatever it is, their world is ending as they see it, and they will do anything to stop that. All right, we're going to take one more, and then we're going to let Maya get back to making democracy a lifestyle. So the question, Maya, is imagine yourself as the Trumpiest, MAGA-iest Trump supporter. How do you defend him after Cassidy Hutchinson's testimony today? I'm going to let you go first.
I was like, one, I don't want to have to put myself in those shoes, but I will. And I will absolutely say, how did these people not help him? This poor man, Trump, alone trying to save our country. Look at him trying to save our country, and they did not help him. They are the criminals. Cassidy is the real traitor to our real America, is what they're going to say.
Well, and I would say, too, that all those people, Maya, who should have done what they did, they didn't do their jobs. They knew that this was stolen from him. And remember, they're going to double and triple down on that, because to believe otherwise is to really have a cognitively dissonant event that I think is almost impossible for somebody to have in that moment. But that's, yeah, I think that's right. It was still stolen from him. You can't tell me different. I don't care. Maybe he shouldn't have done some of these things, but he wouldn't have had to do them, Maya, if they hadn't tried to steal it from him, if they hadn't stolen it from him. And that's how easy it is, guys, to rationalize trying to overthrow the United States Constitution. All right, Maya, I'm going to let you get out of here. But before we do, where can everybody find you on social media?
Reed, I am at Maya on Stage on all platforms, including Peloton, because that is part of my democratic lifestyle, is the togetherness of high-fiving strangers on Peloton.
All right, as always, everybody, you can find me on Twitter at Reed Galen and on Instagram at Reed_Galen_LP. Also, remember that we have made available each of the January 6th hearings, the audio of it on our podcast feed. Please tune in, catch up. It's absolutely riveting. Remember, guys, it's hugely important that we tune into these things. Maya, I want to thank you for joining me today. Always a pleasure. And everybody else out there, thanks so much.
Thanks again to everyone for listening. Be sure to follow and subscribe to The Lincoln Project on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, or however you listen. Don't forget to leave a 5-star review. To connect with us, follow us on Twitter at Project Lincoln. And for more information on our movement, to join our mailing list, subscribe to our newsletter, or make a contribution to our efforts, visit lincolnproject.us. Also, be sure to check out our LPTV lineup, including The Breakdown with Tara Setmayer and Rick Wilson, which airs Tuesdays and Thursdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, as well as We're Speaking with Lisa Senecal and Maya May, which airs Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern. All shows you can stream live on the Lincoln Project's YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter pages. And we'd love you to join us for our newest show, Lunch with Lincoln, which airs every Friday at noon Eastern on our YouTube channel. For The Lincoln Project, I'm Reed Galen. See you on the next episode.